Welcome back. As a storm brewed in Europe in 1939, England or Ireland was a new nation, eager to assert its sovereignty. And 75 years ago, Taoiseach Eamon de Valera announced that the Free State would be neutral if war broke out. Lorcan Clancy has taken a look at what was happening in Ireland in the late 1930s and how the outbreak of war affected the country.
The Anglo-Irish Trade Agreement of 1938 marked the end of an economic war that had been raging for years. A dispute over the Irish Free State's payment of land annuities to the UK had led to increased tariffs on trade between the two countries. The trade war, which took place against the background of the Great Depression, caused much economic hardship, particularly in the farming community. The trade agreement that resolved this conflict contained a provision that would safeguard Ireland's position of neutrality during World War II. The agreement, signed by De Valera and Chamberlain, ended British use of three ports on the Irish coast. This turned out to be very significant when World War II broke out. The Axis powers might not have recognised Irish neutrality if the ports had stayed under British control. Ireland's position of neutrality had the support of the Dáil and the vast majority of the Irish people. By choosing to stay out of the war, the country could emphasise its recently won independence.
The German foe begins its ruthless march of conquest and sets the stage for World War II.
On the 2nd of September 1939, the day after German troops invaded Poland, Ireland declared an official state of emergency.
Poland's 34 million inhabitants, crushed, scattered and enslaved.
The following day, the Oireachtas enacted the Emergency Powers Act. The act gave the government new powers for the duration of the war, including strict censorship of all media. The Garda Síochána were given extended powers of search and arrest. Anyone seen as a threat to Irish neutrality could be detained in an internment camp. Downed German airmen and German sailors who washed up on Irish shores would also see out the rest of the war in a camp. Of course, even though Ireland decided to remain neutral in World War II, the country wouldn't emerge from the conflict unscathed.
Indeed not. Lorcan Clancy there. So what did neutrality actually mean for our small country on the edge of Europe? Bryce Evans, lecturer in history at Liverpool Hope University, is the author of a book detailing the social and economic history of Ireland during the Second World War. And he joins me now. The book is subtitled Farewell to Plato's Cave. Bryce, what's that all? What's Plato got to do with the emergency?
Well, F.S.L. Lyons, sort of eminent famous Irish historian, wrote in the 1970s that Ireland during the emergency, during the Second World War, was like Plato's cave, that the mass of the people in that famous analogy had their backs to the fire of life. And if you read a lot of histories following in the footsteps of Lyons, they repeat this. And I argue in the book that really this attitude is a lot like comparing the people of Ireland to Maguire in Patrick Kavanagh's The Great Hunger. People are closer to the cottage fire than the fire of life. And I don't think this was the case. I think you actually, when you look at the economy and society during the period, we don't find Plato's cave, but rather you get the richness of life, the black market, smuggling, the daily grind.
Okay, talk to us a little bit about some of those phenomena. The black market, for example. It thrived during the emergency.
Absolutely, and this is all through the backdrop of the Anglo-Irish economic war. So it's Churchill's supply squeeze from June 1940 after the fall of France. And everyday necessities, supplies fall. You have, for an agricultural economy, devastating restrictions on feeding stuffs, fertilisers, chemicals, all this. All this means that prices rise, life is hard. And when it comes down to the black market, people have an attitude of perfunctory adherence, okay? So they're in line with the church and state anti-black market message, but nobody sees too much of a problem in dipping in the black market here and there. And interestingly, there's an interesting theological debate rages in the pages of the Irish Ecclesiastical Record. You can't often utter a sentence like that, but that this is also the price of tea. And is it sinful to charge more for a price of tea? And some theologians arguing there's nothing in the world like a nice cup of tea. So therefore, it's okay to pay a little bit over the state price for tea, to engage the black market a little bit. And this is typical of the boom in the black market at the time. And that's got its extensions, of course, in the land border and the smuggling, which undergoes a huge boom as well.
And what kind of things were being smuggled and where were they being smuggled from?
Well, all sorts, really. I mean, we look at the cattle smuggling of the 30s and the economic war, but really now this is consumer smuggling. So you've got the smuggling of things available on one ration, not available on the other. So all these things sort of meat, butter, these kind of things. And people smuggle, ordinary people engage with it to a huge extent, especially women. In fact, as one woman from Belfast who I interviewed said to me, many a skinny girl went down on the train to return that evening from the South heavily pregnant. A lot of people were smuggling an awful lot of stuff. And again, it's to do with price disparity in rationing systems.
Now, you mentioned June 1940 and Winston Churchill and the food coming from the Atlantic convoys, and Churchill decided that we weren't going to get any more of it. But there was retaliation, and apparently one of the forms of retaliation was to deprive the UK of Guinness.
Absolutely, and this is very interesting. If you look at John Betjeman, who's the British press attaché to John Maffey at the time, and he says, it comes down to available resources. He writes to a colleague in London in 1943 on life in Ireland. He writes, no coal, no petrol, no paraffin, no gas, no electric. Whiskey good, Guinness good. So that's what Ireland had at its disposal. And so when Britain starts withholding things like fertilisers, feeds, agricultural chemicals, all the things you need for a modern functioning agricultural economy, La Masse retaliates by withholding Guinness supplies. And with that massive expansion from 42, 43 onwards of the British and American garrison in Northern Ireland in the run-up to D-Day, this is going to be damaging. So Ireland really is functioning through barter arrangements for a lot of this period, staying alive really through barter.
Now, you mentioned the church. The church was very uncomfortable with the fact that the role of the state appeared to expand hugely during the war.
Absolutely. And priests react very negatively to loss of their material privileges, especially the ban on private motoring. Now, the church is on message. The bishops are on message when it comes to the compulsory tillage drive and all the rest. But when it comes to this loss of these material privileges, the priests react very angrily, really negatively. And episodes like this bleed into this broader debate between the state and the vocationalist lobby. Do we have a big interventionist state or do we have a smaller state with the vocationalist lobby? And I think that tells us a lot of really about the ugly side of the emergency as well. You have the coercive role of the state. You've got miserable conditions on labour camps. You've got the eviction of farmers considered unproductive, very controversial at the time. There's restrictions on the movement of travellers. There's a lot of child labour, child mortality. So there's bigger issues here. And church and state aren't always as cosy as people would assume in this period.
And did you actually have fears of famine? Because there were fears of famine in other neutral countries in Europe, in Portugal and Spain.
The F word recurs all the time. And famine is there like a sort of dimly remembered but disquieting nightmare. I mean, that we're approaching the centenary of the Great Famine in this period, and because of the wheat issue, okay? And people know, what they know about the emergency is the black loaf, this 100% whole grain, and that's due to the wheat shortage. Of course, as we know now, it sounds very nutritious, but it contains too much phytic acid, the black loaf, so you get childhood rickets. But this ties into this great fear that Ireland's not producing enough wheat, not producing enough bread. And look, famine was a realistic possibility. There were famines in Western Europe, Greece, the Netherlands, elsewhere.
And the bicycle was ubiquitous.
The bicycle was ubiquitous. And if you think, you know, Flann O'Brien's The Third Policeman, written at this time, Miles, 1942, the transfer of atoms between a man's bottom
so
and the bicycle.
Most of the population of Ireland was basically 90% bicycle during the emergency.
As the official history of Northern Ireland said, it's like going back 700 years, quite smugly, going south of the border, like going back 700 years. And interestingly, an aside, it tells you a lot about the bicycle at the time, we find Owen O'Duffy, the rather, if you like, buffoonish leader of the Blue Shirts, one of his last forays into public life is to try and build a mass movement against bicycle theft. Sounds a bit ridiculous, but it tells us a lot about the economy at the time.
Well, he had security concerns. He had been Garda Commissioner, so I suppose he would have been anti-theft. Bryce, thank you very
Absolutely.
Much
Thanks,
indeed
Miles.
For talking to
Cheers.
Us. Ireland During the Second World War, Farewell to Plato's Cave by Bryce Evans, is published by Manchester University Press. Quickly.